We're doing a lot of this recording stuff, aren't we?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's good.
It is. Yeah, there's something nice, cathartic about it.
Mm.
Kind of gets what's in you out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, I do know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, sometimes things, but I don't know about you, things whiz around in my brain.
Yeah.
And they've got nowhere to go.
Yes.
And I think, I kind of think that that's why people write diaries, but I haven't got the discipline.
No, absolutely not.
For that.
No.
So we come and do this instead.
That's it was capturing thoughts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having a conversation, capturing thoughts, riffing through ideas, and just connected.
Yeah, yeah, no. I look forward to this every week we do this. Yeah, it's good. It's very good for my mental state, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So you messaged me earlier and you said, "What are we going to do about?"
I did. And I don't know what I expected because I kind of rarely expect you to have a plan, if I'm honest. And you did have a plan.
No, I had a word.
Well, that's true. You did. The word was truth.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a bit like you were saying word or
truth.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I know what you mean now. You want to talk about
the idea of truth.
What it is.
Yeah. Because I'm struggling a lot with the world at the minute because I don't think there is any truth in anything. I don't even know what truth is anymore.
It's been a problem, and it has been a problem in philosophy for thousands of years. It goes back to the Greeks where Aristotle talked about what it is and how you define it, and it's confused philosophy students. It's the biggest part. If you do a philosophy degree, the biggest part of it is truth and what it is and how it works, how you define it, truth from a perspective. So it's really possible to have two different truths.
Yes.
From two different people.
Yeah.
Depending on where you stand and what you're looking at and what you're trying to achieve. I think the problem, one of the biggest problems is we oversimplify what it means. We're simple creatures at the end of the day, and we try and oversimplify things. And I think social media, digital news, social news has skewed things. I think that kind of ruined that simplistic vision of what truth is. If you kind of replace truth with facts, right, and you say these are facts, right, that's been ruined by social media because news on social media isn't governed. The success of a news article is not defined by facts anymore or how good an article is anymore. It's governed by clicks and how many people interact with it and if you share it or not.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting because you are much more likely to share something that you agree with than if you don't agree with it. And the interesting thing about that is that the fact or whether it's true or not doesn't come into it at all. Like you just go, oh, that aligns with my biases. I want to believe that to be true.
Yeah.
You know, and then and that's how Facebook's algorithm is written and Twitter and all of the others. And so, you know, the whole news industry has been modified because that's where they're making money. If you share stuff and you interact with it,
that's where it is.
It's where they get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, the age of, journalism where, you know, an actual journal, a real paid, proper trained journalist goes out and understands and something,
figures something out.
And then it's subject to review and all of the things.
Yeah.
It's kind of dead. No one cares.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think so. I think that was the perspective you were coming at, from truth today, and the post-truth age they call it.
Yeah, and just this spectrum of perspective that you have to navigate on a daily basis because you know you read something and you go, and then all of a sudden you're totally confused by it. And,
you can't trust anything, can you? I was reading some stuff today, social media stuff about the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of a brilliant quote, which is the first casualty of war is the truth.
Yeah, it is a great quote.
And it's amazing to, as you sit and look at that, my friend, he's quite an analytical guy. He was sharing a bunch of stuff about Britain's response. Now he's very anti the government.
Yeah,
right? So he's very black and white. Anything that the government do is terrible.
Yeah.
And he was sharing a bunch of stuff, I challenged him a little bit and just said, is there any source data? Can you trace this data that you're sharing? And you know, his response was, well, it's just true, isn't it? You know, it's just quite clearly true. And that for me kind of, you know, absolutely articulated the problem. He's he's an engineer, very data driven.
Yes.
But because this article just agreed with what he wanted and what, you know, it just, that's it, just shared it and then spared no thought to justify it. And I think in, when you've got things like wars going on, you just can't trust anyone.
No.
You know, you have to go and either switch off from it.
Yes.
Or be prepared to validate it.
Yeah.
You know, or just accept that you're being manipulated probably.
Yeah.
You know, the propaganda on all sides is meant to justify certain actions and do certain things.
Yeah.
And it might be partially true.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there's also things like lying by omission, which is what was in the data actually that my friend shared today.
Yeah.
So in the data that he shared, it all looked reasonably reasonable, but there was a bunch of stuff missing from it.
Yeah.
Which told a different story. And I think lying by omission. So does that make it, so if you lie by omission, so if you share part of a story which you know, supports your narrative and what you want to, that story you want to tell, is that lying or is that still true? Because you didn't say anything that wasn't true. And I think that's where things get really murky and really difficult, right? Is you know, if somebody's trying to manipulate you by sharing certain things, you know, if those things are true, which often they are, but they're not the complete picture. You know, because I think often it doesn't come down to, it's not as black and white, it's not as digital as, you know, it's not binary, it's not something that's either correct or incorrect.
It's complex.
It is. It's always kind of shades of grey, and then perspectives as well, you know. And but I think there's some brilliant examples of this as well, where once a story has been put out there in social media and in the digital news, the online news, it sticks.
Yes.
So if I asked, do you remember David Cameron?
Yeah.
And the pig scenario where he interfered with a pig.
Yeah. That's a nice way of putting it.
True or false?
Is that true or false?
Hmm.
I would say true because of the way it was reported, but so I can only go on.
24 hours after that was reported, all of the places that it was reported issued a retractment.
Really?
And it was completely false. Never did it, nothing to do with him. And
isn't that interesting? You know, but now it's almost urban myth, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a Twitter hashtag for it still.
Right.
To this day. I'm not going to say it because it's a bit rude, but but it's fascinating,
isn't
it?
So it never happened.
But I just think that stuff is absolutely fascinating. The way we attach meaning to that, because let's be honest, he was the kind of bloke that probably might have done. But no one was like, it's like the stuff about Boris.
Yeah.
You know, people make stuff about him, and everyone's like, yeah, probably did that. Yeah. And then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, yeah, it probably did. Why bother checking it?
Yeah.
You know, and
why bother checking?
Yeah. It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
System one, system two thinking. That do you remember we talked about Daniel Kahneman's book, and he talked about thinking fast and thinking slow.
Yes.
Where that system one brain is animalistic, why Brexit happened, basically.
Yeah.
System two is where abstract maths happens.
Yeah.
Right? And being in system two part of the brain is really, really expensive computationally. It hurts.
Yeah.
My 11-year-old was doing maths today, and he was like, "Dad, my brain hurts." and it's like, yeah, it does. That system two part, it hurts. It's like lifting weights in the gym. It hurts your brain. So we just don't do it.
Mm.
System one part of your brain, David Cameron.
Yeah.
Did a pig.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And that's where it comes from. That's what we're dealing with.
I had no idea it was retracted. That's funny. But isn't it interesting? Like, before we hit record today, you were talking about when you're with someone in person and your viewpoint is changed.
Yeah.
And you'll probably unpick this one properly with me, but when your viewpoint is changed, it's easier to do in person and it's harder to do online.
Yeah. One of the things I teach our PMs is...
What's PM, sorry?
Program managers.
Okay, yeah.
And one of the things that is is fascinating to see their like this dissonance where they don't believe me.
Yeah.
Right? And then they'll normally come back like a year or two later and go, do you know that thing you said? It makes sense. But I said to them, you can't change somebody's mind in text.
Yes.
Right. So if you've got a polar opposite opinion to somebody, and whether that's in social media or via email, it doesn't really matter. Mm. If you like engage in conflict,
yes,
in like written communication,
yeah,
people, so rarely change their mind. All they do is spend a bit more time justifying their original position.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. You can see it on social media. Mm. Just go and pick a thread, go and pick any of the politics things, anything about Brexit, just watch that and just watch people debate and argue, and no one ever changes their opinion.
Mm.
In person, people do. In person, it's you're much more likely to do it. And so one of the things that I teach them is, look, if you really need to change someone's opinion, and it's important, so it's important that you need to change someone's opinion for whatever reason, you need to break out of the textual communication and either get a video call going or go and see them. And of course, that's been really difficult with, which is why we talk about it, right? So to be aware of, you know, saving those kind of conflict style discussions until you can be in a video call or you can go and see somebody.
Mm.
But it's weird. The psychology is just bizarre.
Yeah.
You can see.
Well, you can't empathize. You can't, you know, there's that. Whether it's a real thing or just a number that someone made up, but the majority of your communication isn't verbal.
No,
it's non-verbal. So therefore, if you're not communicating in a physical way, then you're missing all of that non-verbal communication.
And empathy is system two as well. It's expensive.
Very expensive.
So we don't do it. We compartmentalize people as either with us, in the echo chamber, or against us. And obviously, if you've just engaged in conflict with somebody, you know, that's, you're not with them, are you?
So you said something about the algorithm earlier, about how the algorithm manipulates the opinions to be in agreement with online.
Yeah. So this came from, and again, a lot, this isn't, it's important to understand that Facebook isn't evil. Like they're not trying to ruin society. They're just trying to sell ads.
Yeah.
Right, same as Google.
Yeah.
All they're trying to do is sell ads. So they don't really care about politics, right? They don't really care who's in power. They don't care anything. I mean, people have got these conspiracy theories, but they're just utter nonsense. All they care about is engagement on the platform, new people signing up to the platform.
Dwell time, staying on the platform.
Yeah, and then...
So you see most ads.
How many ads can you get to serve them?
Yeah.
And one of the things they did early on in the Facebook story was they started to run these tests and trials, like random trials, to see what happens with people. What do you do? How do you behave? Do you behave if we show you a picture, if your friend clicks on a picture, if a news article that you completely disagree with, that we think you disagree with, or something that you do agree with? And what they discovered is that people engage with the platform significantly more when it agrees with them.
Yes.
Right? So if the platform says things that they agree with,
they love it, that echo chamber
kind of thing. So that's what it did. So the algorithm started to match you against people that it thought you had a lot in common with. So it would share, you know, you would see friends that the platform thought you agreed with, or it would show you posts that it thought you would agree with.
We can go back to Brexit with that my experience of Brexit was like, oh, it's a done thing. We're going to remain because that was my personal opinion on it. So everything that I saw online was like, oh, right. And then when you know, the numbers came in,
did that happen?
How can that be possible? Because everyone's saying it's a bad idea. And what you realise is you don't see everything. The full spectrum of reality through your lens.
A staunch Jeremy Corbyn supporter.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating to me, listening to him speak, to say, it's totally going to get in. And landslide victory.
Yeah.
And one of the things I learned during that time was to be... I don't know. I'm quite data driven, but I learned to empathize a little bit. And I remember saying, are you sure? I mean, how confident are you? Everybody says this.
Yes.
And it's a problem, because that, if that's where you get your perspective, then it's broken you don't get, I mean, for some people that's fine, right? You know, some people it doesn't matter. But I think for a lot of us, you know, we need to be aware that, yeah, you know, the social media, that's what it's doing. And it's, yeah, not malicious, and it's not meant to do anything bad.
Yeah.
It's literally just trying to sell ads and make us happy.
Mm.
And for me, it's kind of the bit that's broken is that we've chosen that space to get our news from because it's easy.
Yeah.
And that for me is where, you know, almost the truth has been broken a little bit. But also we don't change our minds. There's this concept that was given to me by one of my mentors, Craig, at work. And it's this concept of strong opinions weakly held.
And yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, so I like that.
You,
yeah,
and I have talked, yeah, about this a little before. And I think I did this naturally, but I assumed everybody did it. And that caused me lots of problems at work in the early days because I assumed everybody thought the same. And you do this. You assume that people think and know the same things that,
yes,
you do.
Yeah.
And I really struggled because people wouldn't change their opinions. Right? Mm. And I thought, you know, why are these people being so so rigid? But the concept is that you take a scenario. You know, Brexit might be a good one, actually. You take this concept and then you take everything you know about it at the time.
Yes.
And you make a decision. And you, yeah, might say, you know, remain or leave or whatever.
Yeah.
And then as more information becomes available, you change your opinion or you reevaluate. So you kind of go, oh, but, you know, here's some more data. Should I change my opinion based on this?
Mm.
And the most common human reaction isn't to do that. It's what we typically do. And what social media does actually is that we ignore,
yes,
new data that doesn't align with our original perspective.
Dig our feet in.
Yeah. So if we've made a decision to, so we've made a decision to remain.
Yeah.
And then some more information comes along, which says, actually, this is going to be so much better if we leave, and this is going to be better, and all these things are going to be great if we leave. Because we decided to remain initially, we ignore that. It's like a filter. We just don't see it.
Yeah.
But information that tells us we were right initially,
yeah,
we take that on board.
Okay.
And we go, yeah, cool.
Yes.
So the concept behind it and the training that we go through internally with this is that the making decisions based on information is, we're pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Pretty good. The bit we're really bad at is this filtering of stuff that we don't agree with.
Yeah.
And then changing our minds.
Yeah.
And it's a skill you have to learn, just like, I don't know, playing the guitar or anything else. The more often you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
But it was, once that was explained to me, I started to realize that, like, some people just naturally do that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you must have, I changed my mind about the best band in the world. It's why I don't have tattoos, because I can't, I change my mind on things,
yeah,
randomly.
Yeah.
Not randomly, but it's infuriating for people that need,
yes,
security. You know, if, yeah, you're dealing with, people dealing with me, you know, and they want a definitive, and, you know, project managers deal with me sometimes and they want to know definitive dates. And I'm like, well, probably. Probably it might do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the next time, like, definitely not. You know, totally not now. It's all changed. And you kind of realize I'm pretty infuriating to deal with naturally on because of that.
Yes.
But it also helped me deal with others, that you realize people get stuck in that rigid state.
Yeah.
Based on that original decision. The bit that I found fascinating, that's the psychology behind it, is that you'll spend, and they talked about, like, orders of magnitude more time justifying the original decision than defending it than you spent making it.
Wow.
So you might spend 20 seconds deciding leave or remain,
yeah,
based on some stuff that you've already read on Facebook.
Yes.
And then you'll spend hours
backing up that,
justifying,
yeah,
that,
okay,
decision.
Yeah, yeah.
It's human nature, apparently. Normal,
yeah,
completely normal. But
yeah,
that's why, in my opinion, humans are losing against the algorithms.
Yes.
Well, that's why we're not dealing with it very well.
So I suppose the next question off the back of that then, and you've already spoken about it with that actually, but what tools do we have that will allow us to get a better understanding of the complexities? And actually, do we have to let go of truth?
Mm.
Do we have to let go of the concept of truth when we're talking about, you know, I was at an event and we were talking about, it's centered around the idea of racism, but there's a beautiful TED talk which speaks about, it's like a kind of TED Circle event, and they were talking about, you know, the danger of one story, a single story, and having one set of
one perspective,
yeah, exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, as with all TED Circles, the conversation sort of did what it's doing now with us, where we're on a theme and meandering around, mm-hmm. and hopefully it entertains people, and yeah. hopefully it gets people to think a bit. But it got to a point where we were talking about, okay, so we see all of these problems, we see all of these ideas. So what is the solution? And the thing I kind of stepped in with at that point was this idea of maps and our yeah. map of the world and our understanding of what the world is. So
gotcha.
our viewpoint and understanding and the way that we navigate the world is from the maps that we're presented with.
Gotcha.
And these maps are environmental, they're parental, they're, you know, our school, our education, our experiences, and all of this idea of reality that we create for ourselves is through our understanding and kind of like the way that we experience the map that we see of the world.
Yeah.
And when that map is social media, when that map yeah. is that sort of stuff, then, you know, our over time, where you're talking about how we change our mind over time,
yeah.
then we might, you know, that country, oh, we've got the size of that country wrong, we need to make that bigger. Oh, yeah. we've got that, you know, that's yeah. not quite right. This information, this key's not right. We need to change a few bits. So through our life, our map changes.
I think that makes so much sense, you know, that yeah. because that feeds into your system one thinking.
Yeah.
You system one thinking is essentially those shortcuts, that those maps of how we make sense of reality, that you know, if you drop something made of glass, it's going to break. You don't have to think about that, you just know that's going to happen, right? If you touch something hot, you know you're going to get burned, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
those maps that you're talking about, that's system one thinking. That's yeah. the super fast part of the brain. You're not analytically thinking, you're reacting based on your prejudices, your biases, your experiences. And that, yeah, I think the way you're defining that as a map or maps, I think it's absolutely spot on. It's a really good way to probably visualize the psychology of what's happening in the brain, of how it's making sense of the world.
So my challenge to the people in the room that night was put the maps down.
Put
the maps down and actually experience the world. Yeah, don't try and interpret it through a lens. Don't try and interpret it through a map. Stop trying to change your map.
Yeah.
Just lay it down for a bit.
I think that makes tons of sense. Well, what you're actually saying is, I mean, I think what you're saying is, and this is something I struggle with and I see other people struggle with as well, is that be present.
Yeah.
Right. Be in the room. And I've seen, there was a brilliant, brilliant interview with Michael Schumacher.
Right.
And people were asking, this was in the day where he was just untouchable.
Yeah.
And the interviewer was asking him what makes him special, and why, you know, why does he get it? And he said, I don't multitask, I do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I focus on that thing completely wholly, and then I move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, that being present and focusing on where you are,
or
who you're with, what you're doing, that is really critical.
Because that's the truth I want to smash now, is that there's no such thing as multitasking. It's not possible. Yeah. You can't do it. You just do lots of things.
Badly,
But it's like the whole, the way, I suppose it's the way the computer processes work.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do two things at once. They do one thing and then they jump onto something else and they jump onto something else. And if they've got loads of RAM, they're fine. But humans don't have a huge amount of RAM.
Well, it's proven time and time again that if you get people to multitask, they make more mistakes and it takes longer. And all of the concepts about multitasking. So multitasking only applies to system two thinking, or the break-in only applies to system two thinking.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, you can walk and talk at the same time.
Yes.
Right. You can drive a car and eat a beautiful vegan sausage roll from Greg's at the same time. Right. So you can do a bunch of things at the same time and you can multitask, but only system one stuff. You can only multitask system one things. The second, you need to be present and analyze. So if you think about driving a car, you know, the people say, I drove on autopilot, so I can't remember the journey.
Yeah.
It's because you did it on system one thinking and your brain was off doing other things. Mm. If someone walks out in front of the car, system one has to kick in.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, being on the phone or whatever else, that's when all of a sudden you're now multitasking and the brain breaks down and you just can't do it. So for me, I think it's very much being present. So to get at that truth,
yes,
is, you know, be present when somebody's talking to you and they're sharing with you things like active listening. And if you're not familiar with active listening, it's worth taking some time to look at that, because I think that's really valuable when you're, especially when you're debating or if you're talking to somebody about something, you need to learn to listen.
Yeah.
And then Being present is another really, really good one. But then also just being prepared to change your mind. Is that not you need to engage knowing that you're probably wrong.
Yeah.
And that's where you begin. We teach this thing called assume a good intent. And also you assume that you're wrong. Right?
Yeah.
So until you can prove that you're not, right?
Yeah. So.
And I think that's probably, where you would go. The problem is it's expensive. Expensive's a really bad way of describing it, I think, in simple terms. But we don't like doing it. It's like going to the gym.
It's harder.
Yeah, we know we should. We know we should go to the gym, but we don't, right? And the same as we know we should work on our brains, but we just don't. And, it's easier to be spoon-fed the drivel from social media than it is to be present in a room, because it's exhausting. It's tiring, just like going to the gym.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's quite sad for me, is I don't see an easy way to fix this, right? I think, schools are not particularly doing a great job at teaching children to deal with it, to deal with the ambiguity of social media. They're very adept at it, but they're just living in the bubbles that it creates for them. I wonder at what point that society will reject social media. What point will social media become, at what point will it become like super cool to not be on? Because at the minute people are disconnecting from it.
Yes.
I don't know. I kind of think that that's what will happen. That those ebbs and flows of society.
Yeah.
I kind of think in a decade.
I think as soon as people really understand what you said earlier, in that it's just ads, it's not social media, it's advertising media. And as soon as you replace that word social with advertising, your lens changes, everything changes. The thing is that you can then use it.
You can then use
it in a really proactive and positive way to do good.
Yeah, I'd agree. Because there is a lot of positives to it. I mean, there are people that I got in touch with after not seeing them for a long time, and certainly on the music side, and we do a radio show together. And so a lot of the content and a lot of the information comes to me from social media.
Yeah.
And that's great. You get to see what people think of things. You get to see, what fan reactions and stuff, which is great. But for me, it's where it's the news, it's the truth aspect. It's, I guess people not realizing that.
So it's about setting your intentions, isn't it? It's about setting your intentions to use that tool in a particular way.
Yeah,
and I know that's your system too. Again, it's not. It's very hard to do that because what you're talking about is developing your map constantly.
And
refreshing it or putting it down, mindful.
The map idea is brilliant because you're almost saying drop the map.
Yeah,
you're saying just get rid of everything all those all those biases.
Yeah,
right. All of those internal biases that we have. You're saying just drop them and start. And that's really hard. Really, really difficult to. Abandon everything that you know or think you know and that you believe to be true, and reevaluating that from scratch.
Yeah.
Why should you? Because that map served you well. It served us well for, thousands of years. But the problem is today those maps are kind of corrupt. Those maps have got stuff in that's not true. Those maps have got things in that's not helpful.
There's ocean monsters. There's mythology. There's everything's spiders. The wrong size.
Yeah. I mean, it kept us safe in the dark. It kept us safe from spiders. It kept us safe from, horrific things. But it's also, reacting to social media in a weird way causes us to be, emotional and get angry about things. And that stops us. When you're in that emotional state, you can't do system two thinking.
Yes.
If you know anybody who speaks multiple languages, so I was once presenting with a friend of mine who is German, and we were once absolutely crucified at the end of a presentation.
Right.
And he was the expert, right? He was the absolute expert, and I was just there to waffle over the top, really. And someone gave us these really tough questions, and they were being really quite aggressive. And he couldn't respond.
Yeah.
He was really struggling. And then so I was trying to step in to help. And anyway, we had our wash up afterwards, and I said, what happened?
What happened there?
And he said, I was so angry.
Yeah.
I couldn't. All I could do was think in German.
Fly and
fight. Yeah. All I could do was think in German.
And then, okay. Wow.
And then so I was thinking in German, and then he said, I was then trying to translate into English. And by the time I'd done that, he'd moved on to something else.
That's fascinating.
And then I was having to rethink in German again. And he said, I just couldn't think fast enough. Yeah. So like this red, so all I could see was red. I was so angry. Mm. And it was fascinating to me. And I often think back to that, you know, that when you're in that emotional angry state, you're incapable of system two thinking. So you need to be, you know, when you feel that emotional anger, be aware that you're totally relying on those historical maps that you've built, and you've, you know, you might be wrong. You probably are wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you need to go and calm down and, you know, gather your thoughts a little bit and then come back to it when you can do it logically and, you know.
So actually, and this goes back to something I've said quite a few times, before we start to even think about what we're doing with our maps and how we engage with the world and all that sort of stuff, actually we need to understand our brains, and we need to, like, you know, I've said this for a long time. I think that every child at school needs to learn a form of CBT.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's
a really important thing. And it's done, you know, there's, I mean, I can think of the school that I work at and, you know, there are conversations sort of about it. And, you know, when we're talking about mental health and we're creating a, what we call a mental health first aid kit, and you know, we're having those conversations. But I think that every single human being should understand at least the foundation basics of CBT, because it's a really good place to start from for emotional regulation.
Yeah,
and to understand how you react to things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's you're right. If you watch Parliament TV, not that I suggest that you do this, but if you watch Parliament TV, what you'll notice, the world-class debaters, which is what politicians are, they try and get their opponent to be emotional.
Yeah.
So that, and that's what, if you watch Boris at the dispatch box and he's doing his PMQs, and I take snippets from this to teach from.
Yes.
What you'll see is when we've got a good, strong opposition, they're being quite personal and they're trying to elicit an emotional response. Mm. And what you'll see is the Prime Minister laughing and joking, and it looks like they're not taking it seriously. But actually, this is about them. This is like gladiators, right? Yeah, they're trying to say, look, I know I'm not emotional. Like, this is funny. This ridiculous thing that you've suggested. It's, you know, and then they, you know, Boris will probably say something in Latin and then, you know, hand wave his way out of it.
Yeah.
But they're trying and they're taught
to get the emotional response.
Because once you get somebody emotional,
they can't think clearly.
Yeah. So then you've got them wrapped around your little finger and you see, you know, Boris does this a lot, and you see some of the Conservative MPs are brutal at this. It's really unpleasant to watch. But that's what they're doing. They're aware of how the brain works, and they're going to manipulate you.
Or
manipulate whoever they're debating with.
Yeah.
But once you know that's happening, that's part of your toolkit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, and when you see somebody and somebody online does something that gets you upset and gets you angry, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
This standard is debating 101. They're trying to get you angry so that you can't think clearly.
Because when you're not thinking clearly, you make a mistake and then they've won.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's gladiatorial.
It is.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, when you're in person, that kind of thing doesn't happen quite so much, right? You're far less likely. We're far more empathetic when we can see, you know, people's faces and we're far less likely to, you know, be a moron and be aggressive to do that in person than you are in social media.
Unless you're drunk.
Yeah,
that's which is where you're in a heightened,
so true. Yeah, that's why fighting happens. Yeah.
Heightened emotional state.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'd not thought about that.
Yeah.
I stopped drinking years and years ago. I don't know. I had my gallbladder removed, Baldwin.
Right.
And I was on a plane and I had a couple of glasses of wine and I just, like, honestly, my brain just like stopped. I love to read.
Yeah.
And it just hit me like a train, and I've stopped drinking ever since. Just never touched it since.
Wow.
And that was like 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
It really scared me, actually. It was really weird. The consultant said it might do it, but but yeah, nothing to do with thinking rationally, but
well, we've been going for 35 minutes nearly, so I think that's probably a good rattle for this evening.
Is that enough truth for
I
you?
Think so.
You can't handle the truth. That's what it is. I don't, there is no truth.
No.
Although Mulder said the truth is out there.
Yes.
So that's what we believe got to do. Mulder. Yep. Yep. I want to believe. I love X-Files. Do you love X-Files?
Yeah. I was a huge fan of X-Files.
I had such a crush on Dana Scully. She might listen to this.